Thanks, and welcome back to the House Committee on Elections, Ethics, and Rules. It seems like we just left this room. And I will open the February 20th meeting of the House Committee on Elections, Ethics, and Rules. And first, I will open a public hearing and work session on House Bill 3639. We have a lot of people signed up to testify on this bill and very little time to hear from them, so I'm going to be calling them in panels so that we can quickly get through this, and we have three other bills. First, I will call Elizabeth Mazzara, Doug McKean, and Kim Clare, if you would please come forward and tell us about this bill. Members, you should have the bill. Marjorie, Stephanie, is your summary?
Madam Chair, in your packet you have the SMS, the Dash 1 Amendment, the Dash 2 Amendment, and the fiscal impact statement for the Dash 1 Amendment.
Great. Thank you. Good morning. Welcome to the House Elections Committee. Please go ahead.
Chair Rosenbaum, members of the committee, good morning. For the record, my name is Elizabeth Mazzara. I'm with the Bureau of Labor and Industries. You have the commissioner's testimony in front of you, so I'm just going to read a brief statement. Simply put...
Now we do.
All right, thank you. Simply put, this bill is about substantial equivalency, which is a certification from the federal government acknowledging that Oregon's laws are in sync with federal fair housing laws. This certification will allow us to do federal fair housing investigations here in Oregon, something we've not been able to do since 1992. 2003, 2005, and 2007, the Bureau of Labor and Industries made efforts to pass substantial equivalency legislation. Last session, Senator Carter sponsored Senate Bill 725, which passed 43-14 in the House and 24-4 in the Senate. House Bill 3639 is the final step in this process. It simply provides statutory fixes required by HUD in order for us to receive this certification. Commissioner Gardner and I met with the Assistant Secretary of HUD on January 30th. She personally guaranteed us that if we pass these minor legislative fixes, we would receive our interim certification within 30 days. I'm hopeful you'll vote to pass House Bill 3639 and help us finally bring federal fair housing investigations back to Oregon. Thank you.
Great. Thanks for your testimony.
Doug McKean, our deputy, and Amy Clare, Administrator of Civil Rights, are available for questions, but no additional testimony.
Great. Are there any questions for these witnesses? Perhaps Doug or Elizabeth or Amy, could you just clarify what the Dash 1 Amendment does?
Sections 1, 2, and 3 of the bill.
Doug, could you please identify yourself for the record?
Thank you. Members of the committee, Madam Chair, I'm Doug McKean. I'm the Deputy Commissioner of the Bureau of Labor and Industries. In House Bill 3639, Sections 1, 2, and 3 put back into law a section of law that was taken out in the Senate Bill 725 in the 2007 section. That section deals with a theory of discrimination called disparate impact, and it applies in the housing area. It applies under both state law and under federal law. The theory applies. What this section does is that Section 2 of the bill does is it sets out the criteria that administrative law judge or court would apply in applying that test in a housing case. After Senate Bill 725 passed, supporters of fair housing laws concluded that it would be better to have that section back in the law, and so this is our just putting it back, a section that was repealed in the 2007 session. The Dash 1 amendments, actually I should probably let the proponents of those amendments to speak to them.
Okay, and I think they'll be up here next.
Okay.
So. Okay, sorry to cut you off. Any questions for these witnesses? I'm sure they will stay in the room, so... Yes, Representative Thatcher.
Thank you. I guess I'm not real clear why they were repealed in 2007.
Madam Chair and Representative Thatcher, I can't really give you the answer to that, and perhaps some of the other folks who were involved in Senate Bill 725 can. I think the feeling in part was that there was a recognition that Oregon law already provided for the disparate impact theory, and that section perhaps wasn't necessary. Again, the section doesn't create or take away the theory, it just provides the criteria to apply in working with that theory. So I'll let the other folks testify about what they...
Great, and we do have quite a few people signed up, so I have a feeling some of these questions will get answered. Okay, thank you very much for your testimony. Next, I will call John Van Landingham and Norton Cabell, and Sean Gillians, if the three of you would please come forward. Good morning. Welcome the Elections and Rules Committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair. We'll try to be brief. John Van Landingham, I'm a legal aid lawyer in Lane County. For the last 14 years, I have been the chief tenant negotiator, drafter, and advocate within a coalition called the General Landlord Tenant Coalition. In every session since 1993, that coalition has produced a negotiated compromise bill amending landlord-tenant law. Norton Cabell is here. He's the chief landlord negotiator within that coalition. We try to work together. In 2003, one of our goals has been to make the law clear to landlords and tenants. It's a complicated area. Most of them operate without lawyers. Our goal in 2003 with the disparate impact statute was to put in statute what is in case law, since landlords and tenants don't generally read case law. They read statutes. They know where the statutes are. They have a copy. They operate with them. So all we were trying to do was put in the statute what is already the law so that it would be accessible to landlords and tenants. To answer Representative Thatcher's question, we have never gotten a clear answer as to why the disparate impact statute was deleted in 2007. It was in the statutes for 4 years. It, as far as we know, it didn't cause any problems, but somehow it got deleted in a bill that we actually supported because we didn't notice the deletion. It was a long 725 was a long bill. Norton was the first to notice that it had been deleted. We want our statute back. The 3639 restores the statute. In drafting the bill, Legislative Council made some changes. The Dash 1 amendments put disparate impact back to where it was. The changes that Legislative Council made in drafting the bill would have impacted realtors. Our commitment to realtors is that we're not doing anything that's expanding the disparate impact statute. We simply want it back. So, please give us our statute. 3639-1 restores our disparate impact statute. Thank you.
Great. Thank you for your comments. Please go ahead.
My name is Norton Cabell. I'm a Eugene landlord, and I'm the legislative director for Oregon Rental Housing Association, which represents about 5,000 landlords around the state of Oregon. I'll be very brief. 3639 with the Dash 1 amendments really does not make new law. All it does is put into Oregon statute what is already in federal law. We as landlords believe that all Oregonians will actually benefit by allowing state government rather than the federal government to enforce fair housing law. Thank you.
Comments, and please go ahead.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. For the record, Sean Gillians, representing the Oregon Association of Realtors. I think Mr. Van Landingham did a good job of explaining what happened when Legislative Council went to put the statute back in the original version of the bill that you have. They tried to clean up some of their language from 2003. That cleanup significantly broadened the language, in our opinion, and so we support the Dash 1s to go back to what the statute was.
So I assume, just to restate what I think I've heard, that you are all in support of this bill with the Dash 1 amendments.
Yes, ma'am. We're comfortable with the language, yes.
Well, we'd like to hear kumbaya in this committee, and it sounds like that's what we're hearing. Yes, Representative Buckley.
Madam Chair, I just want to commend the witnesses. These are the fastest talking guys we've had for a month. It's really well.
Can anybody remember?
It's the first time I've actually seen anybody put their hand to the say, please give us our statute. So,
Madam Chair.
Thank you very much. Yes, Representative Berger.
I have a question of the panel.
Yeah, of course.
Have you, gentlemen, seen the Dash 2 amendments?
Yes, ma'am.
Do you have objection to them?
My primary goal is to pass substantial equivalency so that the state can start enforcing fair housing law. I'm not sure whether I support or object the Dash 2 amendments, but they've not been reviewed by HUD, and I feel that I'm worried that that's going to kill the whole deal, and I'm not willing to jeopardize. I don't want to encourage you all to jeopardize the whole deal. If we will have time before next session to review details and perhaps come back and fix. I'm not opposed to it in principle, but I don't want to see a substantial equivalency die over what I consider a fairly minor point.
Thank you. Okay, thank you very much for your testimony. And let's see, I think we have only two remaining people who wish to testify on this bill. I'll call John DiLorenzo and Bill Gross. Good morning. Welcome to House Elections and Rules. And if you want to go like this, we'll be very happy to entertain your requests.
Good morning, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is John DiLorenzo. I'm a lawyer with Davis Wright Tremaine LLP. I'm here today on behalf of my client, the Metro Multifamily Housing Association, in support of the Dash 2 amendments. I am here to ask, please keep our independent hearings officers. Please give us that back. Many of you probably will not remember that I was quite active in the passage of two bills in 1997 or 1999, which gave rise to the creation of our independent hearings officer panel in the Administrative Procedures Act. Those bills inaugurated for the first time ever an opportunity for those subject to administrative hearings to have their cases heard by independent and objective hearings officers not employed by the agencies. Since 1999, the legislature has made these hearings officers administrative law judges, and their presence in the system have greatly improved the administrative process. And this is because, from the standpoint of a party before an agency, the hearings officer's role is tantamount to that of a judge, an independent, objective fact finder who applies the laws, who applies the law to findings of fact and reaches a result. Since the adoption of the law in 1999, most agencies have used administrative law judges to conduct their administrative hearings with great success. House Bill 3639's provision in Section 12 reverts back to the days when the agency prosecutor also served as the judge in the administrative hearings, and is a step backward from the more equitable position which is now taken today by Oregon's Administrative Procedures Act. Now, we are mindful of the fact that most of the provisions in 3639 have been driven by the Department of Housing and Urban Development. We know that. And we also know that in order to allow BOLI to process complaints which would otherwise be handled by HUD, Oregon must adopt a law which is substantially equivalent to the Fair Housing Act. We have reviewed the federal regulations on point, and also two letters from HUD, one dated January 31 and one dated February 8, 2008, which talks about Section 12. HUD's concern was that prior drafts of this bill would have delegated agency authority to non-governmental employees. And so we have been very careful in the Dash 2 amendment to provide that administrative law judges will handle the hearings, but they must be employed by the state of Oregon. Now, BOLI objects for two reasons, and this comes from my conversation with Commissioner Gardner yesterday. First of all, Commissioner Gardner indicated to me that HUD had not been given an opportunity to consider whether independent hearings officers should conduct these hearings. He believes that independent hearings officers should not conduct the hearings because they lack expertise and because the administrative law judge panel charges BOLI more than BOLI could take care of this process internally. And to that, we just offer a couple very quick rejoinders.
And they'll have to be very quick because we do have a room full of people, including legislators, waiting to testify on other
things. I understand.
Bills,
so. Thank you very much, and I'll be very quick. First, BOLI employees may have expertise with respect to labor management issues, but everyone is starting from ground zero on enforcing the federal law. Secondly, BOLI both the Fair Housing Act and 3639 permit courts to have jurisdiction over these cases. BOLI would be hard-pressed to object to courts hearing the cases because they lacked expertise. Frankly, courts make themselves experts in short order, and hearings officers have the same ability to do that. With respect to the cost issue, you know, if you really wanted to be cost-effective, you'd make the prosecutor the judge. But I don't think anyone here would suggest that that would further the interests of justice. And so every once in a while, it's just a little bit more expensive to impart some justice to the system. So in summary, We believe this amendment will fully comport with the HUD guidelines. Secondly, HUD never had an opportunity to consider independent hearings officers. And third, adopting the amendment will just comport this bill with the rest of Oregon's administrative process. And you should not step backwards on independent hearings officers. Thank you very much.
Thank you for your comments. Please go ahead.
Madam Chair, committee members, my name is Bill Cross. I'm here on behalf of the Building Owners and Managers Association and the International Real Estate Managers Association, generally apartment owners. And we support the Dash 1 amendments as well as the Dash 2 amendments, particularly with regard to the Dash 2 amendments. We believe the inclusion of independent hearing officers is important to ensuring the integrity of the process. And I think in reviewing the HUD documents that John DiLorenzo has evaluated, we would come to the same conclusion that it would not violate the HUD requirements to allow governmental independent administrative law judges to participate in this process.
And Bill, who did you say you were representing again?
BOMA, the Building Owners and Managers Association, and they are partnering with IRAM, which is the International Real Estate Managers Association.
And were you involved in the negotiations that have been going on over the last week on this bill?
No. We followed the bill in 2007, but just got the bill a couple days ago.
Great. Thanks very much, both of you, for your testimony. Are there any questions for these witnesses? Yes, Representative Thatcher.
I was understanding the previous panel, this law was in place before, and it allowed BOLI to, I guess, adjudicate any issues that came up. Is that correct?
Madam Chair and Representative Thatcher, only the topics covered by the Dash 1 amendment were in the law previously, and they mysteriously were deleted. So it's my understanding the Dash 1 amendment restores that. The rest of the bill has to do with permitting BOLI to adjudicate these HUD complaints.
I can certainly allow you to continue questioning these witnesses. I think they do not speak for the agency, however, and whatever they say, they're conjecturing about what the agency's position is, so we'll probably have to call the agency back up.
Well, I'm just wondering if there's been past experience with BOLI adjudicating any of these claims, and so, okay.
And we'll get it. We'll get an answer.
I'm just wondering
if
it's just new, if that was existing. Clarification, thanks.
Any other questions for these witnesses? Okay. Thank you very much for
your
testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Appreciate the time. I know you have a crowded agenda.
Yeah, thanks. And so I think before we move into motions on this bill, I will ask Doug McKean and Amy Clare to come forward. And you heard the testimony, and I just ask you to respond to, I guess, mainly to Representative Thatcher's question.
Okay. Madam Chair, members of the committee, I'm Doug McKean, Deputy Commissioner again. When the hearings officer panel was first created a number of sessions ago, BOLI and several other agencies were not included with that. We have within the agency a couple of ALJs on staff. They hear all of our civil rights complaints, all of our wage and hour complaints, our farm forest labor stuff. So we already have that mechanism set up. But those employees are not the prosecutors. We have set up the agency so that the folks who investigate and prosecute cases are kept completely separate from our two administrative law judges. So from my point of view, to carve out this one narrow area of law that with our whole process would divert just a few cases to the administrative law hearings panel doesn't make a lot of sense. We already hear housing complaints in the agency under state housing law, and we've got some expertise with our administrative law judges in those cases now. There aren't a lot of those cases because most cases go the federal route. They go with the Fair Housing Act, and they go up to Seattle for investigation and so on. But it doesn't really make sense to me for this narrow little category of cases to divert them off to the hearings officer panel when we've already got that expertise and the mechanism, all the machinery for doing contested case processes already within the agency.
Yeah, it sounds like a government efficiency issue to me. Okay, any other questions for these witnesses? Okay, thank you very much.
Well, I actually do have a question.
You had a follow-up?
You say a lot of these cases get diverted up to HUD in Seattle, but I thought the purpose of the Dash 1 was to make it substantially compliant and have the state do it.
Right.
And so it wouldn't be diverted anymore under this bill. It would be staying here.
Right. And Madam Chair and Representative Thatcher, that's exactly right. And that's the point, is to try to bring those or get those investigations back to Oregon. And so, but what I'm saying is, under the current state law, not counting all the cases that are fair housing cases, Fair Housing Act cases, the federal law cases, there is some expertise already in Oregon just administering the state law, but it's not substantial equivalent. By getting substantial equivalency, those cases that now get diverted to Seattle at the HUD office would stay in Oregon. We'd investigate them here.
Okay, does that answer your question? Great. Okay, thank you again. Members, we are in a work session. Representative Buckley?
Madam Chair, I move the Dash 1 amendments to House Bill 3639.
Representative Buckley has moved the Dash 1 amendments to House Bill 3639. Members, they are reflected in the fiscal and the staff measure summary. Is there any discussion on the Dash 1s? Seeing none, is there any objection to the Dash 1s? Seeing none, Dash 1s are adopted.
Madam Chair?
Representative Berger.
Madam Chair, I move the Dash 2 amendments to House Bill 3639.
Thank you, Representative Berger. Representative Berger has moved the Dash 2 amendments to House Bill 3639. Is there any discussion on the Dash 2 amendments? Representative Berger, to your motion.
Madam Chair, I don't think this is a fairly minor point. I don't think it's an issue of government efficiency. I think it's an issue of independent review of the facts in cases like this. I think it's important that we go through the ALJ process. We have set it up for that purpose, and I think this is a perfect case where we should be doing it, and I fully support, since I submitted the Dash 2 amendments.
Yes, Representative Hunt.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The one thing that may be helpful for us, because this is obviously not an area of expertise for me at all, but I did find it instructive that in the statute where it talks about the provision that Mr. DiLorenzo talked about, the statute requiring agencies to use administrative law judges from the Office of Administrative Hearings, except for, and then it goes A through Z, and then it actually has to start with double letters because there are so many agencies from the Attorney General to the Racing Commission to BOLI to Corrections to Department of Ed to Higher Ed to Human Services, just on and on and on. So I just didn't want us to have the impression that this was the one carve-out. In fact, there are, by my count, 27 at least carve-outs from this. So I think the ALJs do work in many specific circumstances. I just didn't want us to be left with the impression
that they work everywhere. I think that's a great point. And I do remember when the Central Hearings Panel was set up that it was meant to be able to handle many kinds of matters, but that there was always contemplated that there would be specific expertise that would continue to be contained in other places. And it has worked well in part because that has been able to be true, and I think this is clearly an example of that, and that is, I think, why the Dash 2s would cause a huge problem in what we're trying to do, which is move a bill forward which will make things easier for Oregonians, both landlords and tenants, and I think that's why we've heard them supporting this bill. Okay, so further discussion on the Dash 2 amendments? Seeing none, will the clerk please call the roll?
Yes.
No.
Representative Hunt?
Nope.
Representative Thatcher?
Yes.
Vice Chair Berger?
Yes.
Vice Chair Buckley?
No.
No. Motion fails. Representative Buckley?
Madam Chair, I move House Bill 3639 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Buckley has moved House Bill 3639 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there discussion? Yes, Representative Thatcher.
Well, after hearing testimony from the last panel, I think Doug was saying that all the cases that have been going up to Seattle would now be heard here, and I don't see any impact, fiscal impact, that relates to that. Would they be adding more people to deal with that? I'm not real clear. It just seems like it ought to.
Yeah, we'll let, why don't we ask them to come forward and answer that question? Good morning.
Good morning.
Identify yourself for the record.
For the record, my name is Amy Clare. I'm the administrator of the Civil Rights Division at the Bureau of Labor and Industries. Representative Thatcher, currently we do not have a contract with HUD, so if we were to enter into a contract with HUD once we were deemed substantially equivalent, they would provide us funds to do the investigations on these complaints. Probably one hearing a year would be held. When we get complaints, only a small fraction of complaints actually make it to hearing. So we may have one or two hearings a year were we to get an intergovernmental agreement.
Okay, so you would be reimbursed pretty much. Okay. That's
good to know. Thanks. Great. Thanks very much for that clarification. Yes. Further discussion on the motion? Seeing none, will the clerk please call the roll?
Yes.
Yes.
Representative Shields?
Aye.
Representative
Thatcher? No, for now.
Vice Chair
Berger?
No.
Vice Chair
Buffin? Aye.
Aye. Motion carries. Chair will carry this bill on the floor, and I'll close the public hearing and work session on House Bill 3639. Okay.
That's courtesy note from Representative Thatcher.
Moving right along, let's open a work session on House Joint Memorial 102. And I see that we have Representative Barker and Colonel Caldwell here with us. Thanks for waiting so patiently, and please come forward.
Oh, I'm sorry. Madam Chair, members of the committee, HJM 102 urges the U.S. Congress to enact and fund the Yellow Ribbon Reintegration Program. And this is a new bill to you from the Veterans Affairs Committee.
Good morning.
Morning. Madam Chair, committee, I'm Jeff Barker, state representative from House District 28 and chairman of Veterans Committee. We passed this bill out. This bill was brought to us by Congresswoman Hooley. And she asked us for support to get the federal government to support the reintegration program known as the Yellow Ribbon Reintegration Program. And we asked that we do send letters to our delegation asking them to support that. Next year we're going to send 3,500 Oregon National Guard members to the Middle East. And so there's going to be all those families left behind. And this program would help the families that are here, help the soldiers that are in Iraq and in Afghanistan and all over the Middle East. And we think it would be very good. General Caldwell and his group have one of the best programs for reintegration in the country, and the rest of the country looks to Oregon as a model for the reintegration of those troops, and that this will just be an asset to that. Thank you.
Thank you very much for bringing this to us. Yes, Colonel Caldwell.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Brigadier General Mike Caldwell, Deputy Director of the Military Department.
I'm sorry.
That's quite all right.
Please forgive me.
I was a colonel a lot
lower. Second time this week that I've
colonel
called
General.
I called a police officer lieutenant when you were actually a detective. So I'm on a roll.
I was a colonel a lot longer than I've been a general, so that's quite all right. As Representative Barker indicated, there's a program in Congress or a bill in Congress to try to create a yellow ribbon program for the entire country. We, along with the state of Minnesota, not in conjunction, we actually worked independent, but we came up with a reintegration program here in Oregon. Most of you probably don't know, even today, we've got roughly 500 people that are in Afghanistan and Iraq from the Oregon National Guard. In fact, General Reese is in Iraq today. He was supposed to be in today to visit those troops. So we've been doing this now since the beginning of this war and recognized that we needed to have a program for our soldiers and their families. And we've had a fairly robust family program, but we really hadn't done the reintegration piece. So what we've created here in Oregon is both state and federal funded. It's a mix of money. What this bill will do is tell the Congress to go ahead and pass the right thing, which is really to have the federal government and DOD fund these programs. And that's really what we're looking for out of this whole operation. And I think that regardless, the legislature and the governor, has been very supportive of how we've done business, and we've been able to stitch together a very effective team to do exactly what needs to be done, which is bring these soldiers back and get them jobs, education, and make sure that they don't slide off the edge. I will tell you that we've been successful. That does not mean that we haven't had incidents where people did not reintegrate very well. So we're chagrined about those rare occasions, but nevertheless, they do happen. This will be a good act if we can get the Congress to do this, and I think it's part of the process that we need to do in order to take care of our men and women who choose to go over and serve their country.
Thank you. Thank you for bringing this forward, Representative Berger.
Hey, thank you, Madam Chair. General Caldwell, since the beginning of the Afghanistan and then Iraq wars, how many Oregon National Guard have served?
Madam Chair, Representative Berger, Vice Chair Berger, right, if we counted every single individual order that we have, what we call cut an order, that means somebody is going out the door. We've mobilized on the federal active duty over 7,500 of our force. Now, if you take the Army National Guard, which is roughly 6,500 people, and the Air National Guard is 2,100, as you can see, we're almost at 100% of our total force. Obviously, people get out, people come in, so it's not always the same people. But we've had some that have gone twice, and we've had people that have gone three times. So,
yes, follow up. I understand that for the size of our state, we are severely impacted by these particular actions, and I really applaud you for what you're doing to reintegration. I don't know. I'm always suspicious of these kinds of memorials, going, okay, we did a memorial. What does that do for a family? And I understand why we're doing this. Okay, I'm going to leave my cynicism at the door here and say, how can we do more? And because these are our Oregon families, they have been severely impacted. And the impacts don't end when they come back and get a job. I have a brother who went to Vietnam. It's had lifelong impacts, and we've been at war a long time. So I guess, I'm not sure there's a question in here, but maybe a plea that we should be doing more for these folks, and I don't know how to do it. I feel like, oh yeah, I'll pass this. I'm not going to walk away and say I passed this and the problem has gone away, or I've even really addressed it.
Maybe Vice Chair, or correction.
Go ahead, John. I was just going to say, in this session we have a bill coming down that's going to provide education for widows and orphans, free college education in Oregon, and I asked the military department to come up with one brief bill that they needed immediately that didn't have a high cost, and we have a program, another bill we'll be voting on, and I said, we'll provide $20,000 interest-free loans for these returning people, small business owners, to get back on their feet again. And we've continually been doing a lot for the veterans in Oregon, probably a lot more than other states.
Madam Chair and Vice Chair, I think, as the representative indicated, our legislature, and I think you can all be proud to be involved with a group of people who have seen that it is important that the state legislature step up for Oregonians, whether they be guardsmen or reservists or active duty soldiers. And I think we are way ahead of many, many states. And as I indicated, when we recognized that we needed to do something to reintegrate these folks, and frankly, we were really good at getting people ready to go to war, and we had no experience in getting ready to have people come home and how to deal with it. So we had to learn quickly, and we have a tremendous number of partners. But the legislature stepped up every single time that we've asked, and we've said we've needed something. The legislature's been there. Our governor's been there. So I would tell you that you should be very proud of what this state has done with respect to what we're doing. That doesn't mean there aren't things we can't do, but frankly, we're kind of looking at the eaches now. We're through the big stuff, and now we're down tweaking things. And we get good ideas every day, and Representative Barker's committee has been extremely aggressive in trying to deal with those. So I would say that you should be very proud of what you've been able to do.
Representative Esquivel.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. Appreciate the work that you're doing. I think there's nothing more difficult than being 20 years old, being into a situation where you're in a combat zone and you see things that you shouldn't see, and then 3 days later you're transported back to the United States and let out into society with no guidance whatsoever. Having said that, I'm glad that we are, in fact, taking steps to maybe kind of answer what Representative Berger was trying to get at, I'm not sure that you ever really correct the issue.
No, I know.
The only thing we can do is do the best we can to have a soft landing for these people when they come home, because the environment is such a change, it's such a dramatic change that, I mean, people can't comprehend the cultural shock as well as the environmental shock that you have when you come from a combat zone into a peaceful society.
Madam Chair, and if I may just make one, I could talk all day on the subject, but I also forgot to mention that in the last session, Representative Shields was instrumental in helping us start a program at Portland State University and Lane Community College to set up vet centers. And this is a test right now, and we're hoping to get some better data and come back to 09 to say, you know, we need, and other colleges actually and universities have stepped up and said, well, if they're doing that, it looks like we better try to do something. So there's a lot of activity in that regard. Clackamas Community College stepped up. They've been real champions, and I mean just incredible champions. They shut down their campus for a full day. They let us come in there. They helped us and put together a job fair and education fair. We had over 1,500 soldiers come into that, most of which had just come back from Afghanistan, and they went through that. And the amazing thing was, not only was the public or was the business community there in force to try to recruit these young men and women, but the education community was there just as well and telling them how they can get their education better and how they can get to that next job and get to that better place that many of them really want to be at. Probably the most disappointing thing about it was I think it was a bit overwhelming for our soldiers. And I think they struggled with that. They did, honestly, which was part of the learning process that we're going through in this reintegration thing, is that if you make it too quick and too large, then it becomes very difficult. It's just too much to consume. That's why I think these little tiny vet centers sitting on these campuses with veterans actually helping them, Oregon Department of Veterans Association stepped up, helped funded it. Representative Shields helped us get the money through the last session, and those things are starting to work, and I think Representative Barker's committee and the work that we had last time was real effective. So I'd say we've got a lot of things going right now really well. And the other thing is, we had a question the other day, and I don't remember if it was a committee or news reporter, I can't remember now, but it was about suicides, and that is a big issue about after service and service members, and it's clear that there is a direct impact and direct connection. I'm proud to say that we're fortunate, knocking on wood, we have not had one suicide from one of our people who have returned. We've had some while they're in country. We've had two, I believe. We've had 15 or 16 that we know our reintegration team intervened on. Now, I can't tell you whether they would have happened or not. I don't know that. Nobody does. But they clearly were in crisis. They clearly called our team in the middle of the night and were having difficulty, or a family member called. And our guys were 24/7. There's only five of them, and they cover the whole state. And they went and they intervened. They got the right people in there that understand this sort of thing, professionals, and we got them stopped. So we know that for a fact. You know, we don't know what would have happened if we had not been there. You never know that. But we do know we got those calls. We do know that we integrated or we intervened and made a difference.
Thank you. And Representative Shields.
Thank you, Madam Chair. In General Caldwell, your work has been exceptional, and we appreciate that, as well as Director Willis, in getting particularly that PSU Vet Center up and running. My question is about the future. Now that the surge is kind of nearing its time of completion, what I've heard is that reservists and our National Guardsmen and women are going to be carrying more of the weight there. Do you know what the next year or two looks like outside of the deployment of the 3,500?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Shields, or Madam Chairman, Representative Shields, you know, we don't know. We do. Well, we got a bit of a view right now. We know that our 41st Brigade Infantry Brigade is going to be going to Iraq. We also know that the 3116th, the 3rd of the 116th Cavalry out of Eastern Oregon, who already have done a tour in Iraq, they're on the bubble for 011 right now, is what it looks like. Could be 012. We don't know if that's going to work or not. And I think it's all dependent on what happens on the ground, and I think it's all dependent on on, you know, what ultimately comes out of the results of this surge and whether or not the Iraqis get their act together. If you'll notice in the news, and it's the same, they don't call me up and give me super secret information, so I'm not reporting anything that isn't already in the news media. But, you know, there's a big force of Marines just went into Afghanistan. I happen to have a nephew of mine who's on active duty, 22-year-old kid that's in Afghanistan, been there almost a year. So Afghanistan's a problem. It doesn't get in the news. And I think what we're going to see, if you really analyze this stuff and look at the world media and not United States media, we got more problems, I think, ahead of us in Afghanistan than most Americans really understand. And I think it's going to be problematic into the next decade, without a doubt. So when does this quit? I think that's the base of the answer. I don't think it's going to quit for quite some time. And I think that's, it's going to take some very serious international political moves to solve this, and frankly, that's not happening right now. And Iraqis don't seem to be willing to solve that problem. So we're here for a long time, in my estimation, and thus we just pack up and leave. And I don't see that as probably going to happen, no matter who gets elected. I think we will start seeing withdrawals out of Iraq. The stuff that I read from the smart people that I read, retired generals that have been over there, they basically say it doesn't matter who gets elected, Republican, Democrat, it isn't going to matter. We're going to start pulling back out of Iraq. I don't think we're going to start pulling back out of Afghanistan, so we've still got some time to go.
And then just a closing comment. I think this memorial is dead on. This is the federal government's responsibility, but if they're not going to do their job, it is incumbent upon us to do it. So particularly as somebody who's on Ways and Means and who understands mental health a little bit, please feel free to keep coming back with what you think you need to get the job done.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Shields, we really do appreciate that. And as Representative Hunt was kicking around here earlier this morning, the best thing that we've had for us right now in the United States Congress on this issue has been Darlene Hurley, Representative Hurley. She has absolutely carried a tremendous load. She continues to do that. She'll do it until she finishes her term. And this has been a godsend to our men and our women who serve and their families. And this is just part of that process that she's been working on. She was way ahead of everybody else. DOD and the Congress are starting to catch up. I'll give them that, and I'm proud of that. But you folks stepped up when we needed it the most, right there at the spot where it was most important, and so we'll be forever grateful.
Thank you, Colonel Caldwell. And I just want to say that, and this is not an Oregon story, I know there's no shortage of tragic stories, but one of the ones that I heard that touched me the most was, and this was on morning radio, a woman who was serving in Iraq and was calling home to her family, and her 4-year-old daughter got on the phone and said, "Mommy, if I promise to be good, will you come home?" Ugh. And, you know, her mom obviously was just trying to maintain and say, "You didn't do anything." And then the little girl said, "Well, if I talk to your boss, do you think he would let you come home?" And this story then continued on when this mom got home, because she was bedridden for many, many months and just really, you know, had somebody else had to take care of the kids because she just couldn't deal with it. And I know there are thousands and thousands of stories like that. I'm sure some of them here in our state. So I really do want to thank you for the great work that you've been doing. But it's clear that we're going to be dealing with the consequences of this, and so will families in our state and elsewhere for many, many years. So
I would totally concur with that, and you're right. There are thousands of those stories. Everyone's individual. Every one of them's got a little different twist to it. But the impacts are significant. I guess the thing that continues to astonish me is that of the brave young Oregonians who continue to raise their hand, step up, and truly want to serve their country, and they want to serve their state. And so I'm just, you know, overwhelmed and humbled when I see these young men and women and their eagerness to come up and serve their country, even knowing what's ahead of them. And it's a humbling experience. I don't mind going to work every day. I really don't.
Well, thank you very much. Thank you both. And Representative Barker, did you wish to carry this bill, or did you have somebody else in mind?
I'd be glad to carry it. Thank you.
Okay. Thanks again. And members, we are in a work session.
Madam Chair.
Yes, Representative Barker.
I move House Joint Memorial 102 to the floor with a
Do adopt
recommendation.
Thank you. Representative Berger has moved House Joint Memorial 102 to the floor with a do adopt recommendation. Is there any discussion? Any objection? Motion carries. And we'll ask Representative Barker to carry this bill on the floor. And I'll close the public hearing and work session on House Joint Memorial 102 and open a public hearing and work session on Senate Concurrent Resolution 28. And I'll call Tony Chadrick.
Yeah, very much so.
Madam Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Tony Kodrick. I'm the Corporate Secretary of Oregon Mutual Insurance Company in McMinnville. Thank you for this opportunity to ask for your support of SCR 28 honoring James Lyle Osborne. I brought his picture this morning because it's always nice to know a little bit about what the person looked like. The best thing I could say to describe this person was he was an honorable man. He was the president, CEO, and board chairman of Oregon Mutual, and he worked for the company for 47 years. What he did was establish values for our company that our employees carry. I'm going to get emotional here because his testimony just reminded me of the best thing I could say about this person is you'll read from my letter all the things he did in the community and in Oregon, in our industry. What he did was establish values of citizenship for everyone and role model that very well. Excuse me. I think I'll give you an example. I just mentioned to General Caldwell that we had a deployed employee who just got back safely, thank goodness. When he was deployed, the company said, we want to adopt him, make sure he is connected to home all the time he's gone. And it turned out that we adopted all 41 soldiers in his unit. We received an award from the Oregon Air National Guard. That's the kind of legacy this person left. And I don't think there's anything more I need to say about him. Thank you very much.
Thanks. Wow. Thanks very much, Tony, for your testimony. Any questions? Okay. Thank you for being here and
thank
for bringing
you.
This forward. And you're in a work session, Representative Berger.
Madam Chair, I'd like to move Senate Concurrent Resolution 28 to the floor with a do-adopt recommendation.
Representative Berger moves SCR 28 to the floor with a do-adopt recommendation. Is there any discussion? Any objection? Hearing none, so ordered. Representative Berger, will you carry this on the floor?
I would really be honored, and I appreciate the
opportunity. Thank you very much.
Thanks.
Close the public hearing and work session on SCR 28. We have one bill left, and I will open a public hearing and work session on HCR 105.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, HCR 105 expresses sympathy to the family of Skip Knight.
Thank you, Marjorie. And I see Representative Esquivel is joining us at the witness table. Good morning, Representative Esquivel. Welcome to the House Committee on Elections, Ethics, and
Security. Honored to be here, Mr. Chair. Representative Esquivel, District 6, Medford. We had a passing of an individual here that was very instrumental in our community. Representative Buckley was aware of this man. Served for probably 14 years in civic service, 12 years as a city council member, chair of the MPO, vice chair of the MPO, very astute in transportation, instrumental in RV Act, the STIP plan for Southern Oregon he was very instrumental in, and had a great relationship with the OTC. This individual was also on national boards as well. On the National League of Cities. He was on the Transportation Committee for the National League of Cities and went throughout the United States to learn about transportation. He was, in fact, was no longer on the council and was interviewing for a mural job, a Medford Urban Renewal job. One evening, he went home. His wife found him 3 hours later, and he had passed away. And that was just that quick. 67 years old. We had foreknowledge of him having even any difficulty, but I guess that happens. We lost a great mind in transportation, and we lost a great citizen in Southern Oregon. But more importantly, to explain to this committee, we have East Medford and West Medford, and West Medford is the economically challenged part of Medford. And we are the working people in Medford, and we're the ones that have to work two jobs to make things, to make ends meet. Skip was I served on the council with him for 7.5 years. We were council members out of the same ward, which was West Medford. And he was the true voice for West Medford. And with the passing of Skip Knight, we've lost that voice, and that's a shame. There will be other people that will take it on, but not nearly as well as he did. So, unfortunately, we've lost a great citizen in Medford.
I'm sorry.
Having a quiz.
Thank you, Representative Esquivel. Representative Buckley.
Yes, thank you. Representative Esquivel, do I remember correctly, Mr. Knight, he was always very hesitant to express his opinion, wasn't he?
Yeah, but he was one of those that he was a very, you knew exactly what he was thinking.
At all times.
At all times.
Thank you very much, and thanks for bringing this to us. And members, we are in work session, and Representative Buckley.
Madam Chair, I move House Concurrent Resolution 105 to the floor with the do-adopt recommendation.
Representative Buckley has moved HCR 105 to the floor with the do-adopt recommendation. Is there any discussion? Any objection? Hearing none, so ordered. Representative Esquivel, would you be willing to carry this on the floor?
I would be honored, Madam Chair.
Thank you very much. I will close the public hearing and work session on HCR 105. Members, at the moment, we have completed the bills that we are aware of that have been referred to us, and so you should obviously always stay tuned because that's the fun of the Rules Committee. But I did want to just say to the members that this is almost the same committee that we had during session with the wonderful addition of Representative Shields, and in this committee and chairing it and serving on it has continued to be one of the highlights of my almost 10 years now in the House of Representatives. So I don't want to get too mushy here, but I just have enormous affection and respect for all of you that, even though we disagree sometimes on issues, that we've been able to move forward and do a lot of good work, I think, in the last however many months it's been now, actually over a year now, with the people of Oregon. So I want to thank you for the privilege of serving as your chair. Representative Berger.
Madam Chair, I'd like to concur. This has been a wonderful committee to work on. You've been an excellent chair, and even when we've disagreed, it's been with respect, and it has gone extremely well. I do have to comment, however, that when we lost Representative Roblin and got Representative Shields, we no longer get chocolate.
It's true. So there are some things that have evolved.
Not filling the shoes.
Yeah. Point taken. Thank you very much, members.
If I have the pleasure of serving on this committee in the future, I will do my best to.
There we go. Step up.
Hopefully, we have no Senate Bill 10 issues with that comment. No. And with nothing further to come before us this morning, committee is adjourned.
Thank you, Madam Chair.